Hello and welcome to the Foundry Church podcast. My name is Joseph. I'm the worship pastor here at the Foundry Church, and we are so glad that you found us, whether you've been a part of our community for a while or whether you're just stumbling across us on the internet somewhere, whether you've been a Christian for a very long time or maybe you are just discovering or rediscovering what a life of faith looks like for you. Welcome. We're glad that you're here. What you're about to hear is a message from our current sermon series called Life After Death, where we're taking a look at what it means to die to the self so that we can step into the fullness of life that Jesus calls us to. Let's get to it.
Good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so very glad you're here, whether you're joining us in person or online. My name is Seth. This is the Foundry, where we are all about a better you and a better world. I want to give a big shout out to Mr. Joseph Robinson for preaching last week. He did a fantastic job. And what Joe didn't tell you, I don't think he told you, was he 2 weeks ago, he had a lot going on. Like, he's been picking up a lot of the stuff from, like where Hank left, and we're trying to figure all that out, but he's taken some of that on. So he did that, but also he still had to, plan worship, and then on top of that, he had to, write and give a sermon. On top of that, it was a short week, so he had less days, and then that doesn't include all, any family responsibilities he had, so I almost felt bad. So, but I'm so very grateful to him and for him for doing that and for being a part of our team. So now, enough with the mushy stuff. Today, we wrap up our series, Life After Death. Then next week, we're going to start a brand new series that we're calling The Head and the Heart, which I'm really excited for. And then after that one, we have an idea for a series like nothing we've ever done before. Okay, it's not 100% set in stone, and I'm not 100% sure it will work, which might be half the fun of it, but in the near future, I'm keeping it super vague. I'm really excited about an idea that I'm not going to tell you about that may or may not happen. Yay! All right. Good time. Welcome to the Foundry. So we've spent the past 6 weeks talking about dying to the self. And I don't know about you, but it's been pretty awful. It's been terrible. It's like a lot. Like that personal growth and spiritual development stuff is really difficult and painful. I've had to change a lot of how I function. At least I'm trying to. I've had to change my thought process on some things. I've had to attempt to change how I respond or how I react to certain situations. I've had to bite my tongue when it would be easier to just unload or unleash and say the things that were on my mind so that I could feel better about myself. I've had to swallow my pride, and I've gained weight because of it. this is the difficulty of dying to the self. It's been tough, but I also, hopefully, you feel this way, I feel this way, that I think it's been pretty good, too. It's a lot, but it's good. The whole point of all of this death to the self and death to the ego is ultimately to help us get to the true self, the highest self, the image of God that we were created in, the image of God that has been placed within us so that you can come to a place of freedom, so that you can come to a place of peace, to a place of being so free that just like the butterfly, like Joe talked about, everywhere it goes, you are helping other things to flourish. As you become a better you, you help to create a better world. So today I want to look at one more passage here as we wrap up this series. And this is a passage that I've been kind of wrestling with, sorting through for a good bit now. And I believe this speaks not only to the death of self, but also to the freedom that comes after the death of self, the life that comes after the death of self. So turn with me, if you would, Matthew chapter 18, or it'll be up here on the screen. We're going to read through a couple verses here. Matthew chapter 18, verse 1 through 4. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him, placed the child among them, and he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So this whole thing starts with a question from the disciples. Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Last week, Joe talked about the disciples and how they were getting frustrated and upset because there was this person, this guy, who was not one of them, who was healing people in the name of Jesus. And they were like, no, that can't happen. Like, he's not a part of us. There was almost like this us versus them mentality. There was this idea that they were the in ones, and so because that guy was not a part of the in ones, he shouldn't be allowed to do what he was doing, right? It was almost like there was this sense of pride or ego that this guy was doing what he was doing. And so anytime there is this exclusive nature to something, there's going to be the potential for like the bolstering of the pride, of the ego, of the self. So this passage to me, this that we're talking about today, is really kind of like a continuation of this thought, right? They ask this question, and it's like they're the disciples. They're already a part of the in group, but now they want to know, like, well, how do we elevate ourselves in the in group? Like, we've made it to the VIP room, but we want to know, like, who's the most VIP? We want to be in the VIP room that's in the VIP room, right? I don't want to just be a VIP. I want to be the most VIP. I want to be the MIP, the most important person here. So this whole question is really rooted in the self. It's rooted in the ego. And I think this question actually represents how much of the world functions, how many of us function. This question isn't just about them at that time. This is a question that actually is for us in our time. It's this mindset that we often, either consciously or subconsciously, buy into. We want to know who in the room is important. How important are they? How much clout and influence and connection do they have? And then how can I benefit from that? How can I become like them? How can I become better than them? People do this all the time. We do this all the time. Things like money, power, status, recognition, this stuff is everywhere, right? You see this pretty obvious in like workplace scenarios, business, corporate type situations, but you see this in the everyday. Like I see this at the kids' schools, right? Like, well, so-and-so is the room mom and she knows the teachers and she's connected to the principal, so we'd better get to know her, because if we can get to know her, then we're pretty good, right? That's how I used to pick friends growing up. Well, I know that family seems to have a bit more money than my family, which means that he's gonna have better toys than I have, and he's got four-wheelers and dirt bikes, and so we are friends now, right? I see this sometimes even in the church. Like we've had in the past new people that have shown up to the church, and like their primary goal in getting to the church at first is like, oh, I really need to talk to the pastor. I need to meet with the pastor. Everything depends on getting the connection and being in a relationship with the pastor. And I'm like, what is that? Like, and then if they're not ushered into some sort of position of authority or like an immediate connection with somebody that's important in the church, then they leave. And I'm like, what just happened? Do you think I'm somebody? Because I have a difference of opinion, and so do other people. So the disciples asked Jesus, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And it's this question that's rooted in the self and the ego. And then how does Jesus respond, right? Look at this verse again. He says, he called a little child to him, placed the child among them, and said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, if you're familiar with this passage, which I'm sure many of you are, you read it and you may go, okay, cool, it's a bit odd, but maybe not. Like, what's it about? It's probably about like humility, it's about trust, it's about dependence, all these things. Sure, that's fine, that's wonderful. But if you look at this like kind of from a bigger picture, this statement is a radical departure from the thinking of the world. This is a radical statement to them and to us, right? So what I want to do is I want to see if we can like kind of reenact this, and this may not work, but it's something I'm going to try. We're going to see if like we can kind of get a vibe for how weird this whole thing actually is, okay? So let's say you were sitting here and you said to me like, hey, Seth, like, hey, how do I become the greatest in the kingdom? I'm not saying I'm Jesus in this scenario, by the way. That's not what we're getting at. But let's just say you were asking this question. Hey, Seth, who's the greatest in the kingdom? Okay? And then after you said that, I would say, hey, that's a great question. Can you bring this up? Hey, that's a great question. In order to answer that question, hey, Elias, are you in here? Is Elias in here? Can you come up here, buddy? Yeah, come up here. Give him a round of applause. Come on up, bud. There you go. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. All right. Get up on the seat. Can you get up here? No, I guess that doesn't come. So you say to me, hey, Seth, how do I become the greatest in the kingdom? And I said, to answer that question, hey, Elias, come up here. In order for you to enter the kingdom of heaven, you have to become like this. You have to have a really cool mohawk and some cool cowboy boots. Right? Apparently, we have the same barber. Can you hold this and can I ask you questions?
Yes.
Okay, now when you hold it, you have to talk into here.
Okay.
Okay, so what's your name?
Elias.
And how old are you?
6.
You're 6?
Yes.
That's a pretty good age. Is it treating you well?
I don't know.
You don't know. You don't know. It's okay. So what I want to do, buddy, is I want to ask you a few questions, and then you just kind of tell me yes or no. You give me a response, whatever comes to your mind, okay? So you asked, what do I need to do to enter the kingdom of heaven to become the greatest? And I said, Jesus said, well, you have to become like this. So what is this? Okay, so let's see. Do you have a job?
Yes.
You do? What's your job?
To feed the dog.
Oh, to feed the dog. Well, that's more of a chore than it is a job, so maybe. Okay, so do you have any money?
Yes.
You do? How much?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I forget.
So much. He's got so much, he doesn't keep track of it. He's doing pretty well. Do you have a bank account?
No.
No bank account. Okay. Do you own a house?
Yes.
You own a house?
With you.
I own the house. Okay. Do you own a car?
No.
Did you vote in the last presidential election?
No.
Okay. Let's see. How many followers do you have on Instagram?
None.
Okay. have you proven or validated your existence because of any accomplishments? And if so, what are those accomplishments?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Fair enough. Are you the boss of anyone?
No.
Okay. So do you ever get to tell your mom what to do?
No.
Do you ever get to tell your dad what to do?
No.
Okay. That's right. Do you ever get to tell your teachers what to do?
No.
Do you ever get to tell your brothers or sisters what to do?
No.
Oh, man, you have like no sense of power whatsoever, do you? You good?
Yes.
You're doing really good.
Thank you.
Okay. Couple more questions. And then you're going to go back to your class because you're subject to my authority. Do you ever worry about money?
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Like what?
When my brother steals my money.
Oh. Uh-oh. Okay. Do you ever worry about if we'll have food at our house?
No.
No, yeah. It's always there, isn't it? Do you think your mom and dad love you?
Yes.
Yes, okay, good. Do you like to play?
Yes.
Do you believe in Santa?
Yes.
Okay. Do you like to have imaginary battles with your toys?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. Answer truthfully. It's okay. They're your friends. This is a safe place. Do you like to have imaginary battles with your toys?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Ezra, he's my brother. He likes to, in the night, he battles his stuffed animals. He gets
now it's just story time with Elias. By the way, we didn't script, he didn't know any of these questions. I came home one night, I said, I had an idea. Do you think you could help me? And I said, because my sermon would kind of depend on this whole thing. And without hesitating, he said, yes. And he said, well, what am I doing? First, he agreed to what it was before he knew what it was, which is amazing. Okay, so do you like to jump on the trampoline?
Yes.
Okay, do you like to wrestle with your dad?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you like to be tickled?
Yes.
Yes. Do you like to stare at clouds and pretend they're different things?
No.
What? That's not true. I think you're fibbing a little bit. All right. Do you like to sing and dance?
What?
Do you like to sing and dance?
Sometimes.
Do you know the price of gas right now?
No.
Okay. One more question and then you can be done, okay?
Okay.
This is a big one. This is an important one. Do you ever have trouble sleeping at night?
Yes.
I'm not done yet. You always have trouble sleeping at night?
Yes.
But you didn't listen to the rest of the question. So let me finish the question. Do you ever have trouble sleeping at night because you're worried that your life won't amount to much and that you'll disappoint your parents?
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. Good job. All right. So the question is asked, what must we do? How do we become the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus says, unless you become like this, you will never enter the kingdom. So according to Jesus, experiencing the kingdom has something to do with becoming like this. All right, round of applause. Buddy, you did awesome. Hey, thank you so much. I love you. You did great. All right, see you, buddy. I was afraid he was going to get the mic and just not stop. So that went better than I expected. Now, think about how crazy, bizarre, and ridiculous this whole response is to this question of greatness in the kingdom. It totally undermines everything and anything to do with the ego and the self. It totally undermines any sense of earning or proving or striving. It totally undermines anything having to do with acquiring any sort of power or status. Because what did we hear from him based on my carefully crafted questions? He has no money, because his brother steals it, apparently. He has no power. He has no authority. He has little control over anything he gets or doesn't get to do, which is like everything that most of us are continually striving for. These are all the things that we think will make us somebody. These are all the things that we're chasing after that we think will make us happy or allow us to have some sort of freedom or control over our own lives. And Jesus says that in order to enter or in order to experience the kingdom of heaven, you must become like this. A couple thoughts about all this. Three thoughts, really. The first one is this. I don't think the disciples were expecting this. This is not what they expected. Imagine going to your boss and saying, hey, boss man, like, I want to move up in the company. What do I need to do? Or, hey, boss lady, how do I move up in the company? What do I need to do? What are they going to say? They're going to say something like, well, you probably need to do more. Probably need to take more initiative. Probably need to prove yourself more. You need to take on more responsibility. Right? You do that sort of thing, you can kind of start to move up because that's how you move up in the world. How do you become the greatest at anything? Well, you have to do more, prove yourself more, make a name for yourself. That's the way it works. So I imagine when they come with this question, how do we become the greatest in the kingdom? They're expecting the boss man, Jesus, to say something like, well, you know, you need to be more righteous. You need to preach louder. You need to baptize more people. You need to perform more miracles. All of which is great, but really, underneath all of those things, what you're doing can ultimately come back to prop up the ego and build up the self, right? Look at how holy I am. Look at how faithful and spiritual and godly I am. Look at how great of a follower of Jesus I am. But what Jesus does and says here throws a giant wrench into that entire way of thinking. Look at verse 3 again. Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. The word for change here in the Greek text is the word strepho, which means to twist, to turn, to make a change of substance, to change, to turn oneself about, to change one's direction, to change one's course of principle and conduct, to be converted. This actually sounds a lot like repentance, doesn't it? Sounds a lot like repentance. You're going one way, and maybe it's not the best direction, and so you need to change course. And so they ask the question about greatness, and Jesus says, unless you strepho, unless you make a change of substance, unless you change the direction you're heading, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. He says, you're buying into this thinking of the world, which is like everything that I've come to liberate you from. I'm trying to lead you towards the promised land, to this land and this place of freedom, but you keep heading back to the slavery of self that is Egypt. You keep going back. You keep looking over your shoulder going, if only I went back to that, at least I could have some food. What? And Jesus says, unless you change, you will never enter the kingdom. So here they are. They're in the in-group. They're thinking they've got it all figured out. How do we become even more? How do we become greater in this in-group? And Jesus is like, yeah, it's not any of that at all. So I would say this isn't what they were expecting by any means. That's the first thing. The second thing is this, and what I think makes this really interesting, and what I was trying to get at with Elias here a little bit, is that in this time and in this place, children in first century Judea, they had literally no status in the culture whatsoever. Obviously, they would be valued, I guess, by their parents. We like our kids most of the time. Obviously, like they were valued as a, like, here's how we pass on our lineage, right? We need the males to keep producing more of our line. Obviously, they were valued as like ways to pass down the commands of God. Yes, that's all good. But beyond that, until they could work and contribute to the family, they really had no greater value. There wasn't much more. They're just kind of waiting on the boys to get old enough to work. They're waiting on the girls to get old enough that they can be pawned off onto somebody else so they could possibly collect a bride price. Right? You have to remember, at this time in Israel, this is a tough time. Like, they're under Roman oppression. There's this extreme taxation rate. People are losing their family lands. They're losing their businesses. They're struggling to survive. So a child, especially one who could not work or contribute to the family, or who could not be sold off to make money for the family, was just an extra mouth to feed. And so what most scholars believe about this passage is that when Jesus says, unless you become like this child, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven, is that he's not really talking about the childlike characteristics and quality of the child, but rather he's talking about the role of a child in that society. He's talking about their status, which at this time, they have like none whatsoever. This is why in the very next verse, verse 4 says, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. This speaks to the cultural lack of status that children had. Right? The word for lowly in the Greek text is the word tapanoo, which is to bring low, to depress, to level, to humble, to descend to or live in a humble condition, to humble oneself. So whoever takes the position of humility will be the greatest in the kingdom. This is like a huge, like, this is an oxymoron, isn't it? Like jumbo shrimp. Like, these things don't go together. Awfully good. A civil war. A fun round of golf. These things... They naturally oppose and contradict one another. So in order to be great, I have to strive to not be great. If I pursue humility in order to achieve some sort of greatness, then I have not truly pursued humility. So it's like this weird sort of concept. It's like, have you ever done something and you've done something in like an attempt to be humble, but then you thought about how great you were being by being humble? You're like... Yeah, like the other day, we were at the house, and I was like, I was going to do some extra, like just extra stuff around the house to help out, and I was feeling good, I'm gonna clean up, do some things, and I was like, you know, one, trying to earn points with Jess, but that's a whole different thing, but then I was like, I'm going to do this, but then not tell her I'm going to do it, and just like, because I'm going to be humble about it, and so I was sitting there folding the laundry, and I was like, well, I'm really doing good at this, like, way to go me, like it was a whole thing. And then I started thinking like, oh, well, doesn't that go against the thing that you were trying to do by bragging about yourself and then hoping that you're, like, my motive was off, how I was pursuing, the whole pursuit was off, right? So this question about the idea about the pursuit of greatness in the kingdom, it like doesn't really fit into the equation. Jesus says, unless you turn from how you're moving and become like little children, you will never enter or experience the kingdom of heaven. Which by change to become like little children, it's less about the characteristics of the child and more about the status of the child. There's a humility and a dependence of the child that is this thing that he's pointing to. It's only when we pursue this childlike level of humility and dependence without the thought of how humble we look or how humble people will think we are that we actually become great, which actually is kind of weird because then you're pursuing it, which is the opposite of what's happening. To me, this actually sounds a lot like dying to the self, doesn't it? Like, this is like been our whole series. To die to the self, to die to the ego, to die to the pride, to take up my cross daily. It's only when I do these things that I become free. I become free to enter into and experience the kingdom of heaven. And based on how Jesus is talking about this, to me, right, to me, this is not, I want to be humble and die to the self now so that one day in the future after I'm leave this place, then I'll get to step into the kingdom. To me, this is like a present reality sort of thing, that as I die to the self now, as I live in humility, as I humble myself in this moment, it's in the here and now that I get to enter into the kingdom of heaven to experience what that is like. So when you die to the self now, you enter into the kingdom of heaven now. You experience the freedom and the beauty of the kingdom in the now. So the disciples asked this question to Jesus. How do we become the greatest? Who is the greatest? Jesus' response is not what they expected. And then he makes this reference to being like a child, which has to do with status, which really has to do with humility, which ultimately has to do with dying to the self. Okay, now one more thing and then we'll wrap up. And this to me is like really, really interesting. Even though Jesus, in referring to the child, is referring more to the status of the child than he is to the characteristics of the child. I think, it's just me, I think that if we actually do this, if we actually die to the self, if we are actually humble ourselves, and in doing so, we enter into the kingdom of heaven in the here and now, and we enter into the life and freedom that the kingdom of heaven is offering, I think what we will find in that place will actually be the characteristics and attributes of the child. It's almost like the status of the child, it's the lowly status, the humble status of the child that actually allows for the freedom of the child. It's the status of the child that actually allows for the freedom of the child. Think about our conversation with Elias. There is no money, there is no power, there is no authority, there is no status, there is no pursuit, there is no pressure. There is this great deal of freedom. He's not chasing anything. He's not defending the ego. He's not trying to prop up the self. And what we see is this great deal of freedom. He's free to play. He's free to dream. He's free to imagine. He's free to jump and tumble on the trampoline without fear of judgment from others. He's free to wonder and ask questions without any sort of self-doubt. He's free to fight imaginary ninjas without concern for if people think he's crazy or not. He's free to trust that his parents will love him and provide for him regardless of anything without feeling like he has to earn it. He's free to live his life entirely dependent on his parents and to not worry about what the world thinks about him. He lives with this great deal of freedom, and with that freedom comes a great deal of joy and wonder and imagination. And I don't know about you, but like, I want some more of that. Like, I want that. That speaks to something deep within me, almost like it's something that we were maybe even made for. Like, it's something that maybe even God wanted for us from the very beginning. What was it that Paul said about Jesus, about in Galatians 5, about it is for freedom that Christ has set you free? It's almost like we were supposed to be free, and then we develop this sense of self and ego, and then that thing has become the thing that has prevented us from the freedom. We've become slaves to the self. And so when Jesus comes, he comes to remind us and to invite us back into God's intended reality for us. This place of childlike trust and dependency of God that leads us to a place of freedom and joy and wonder and imagination. In fact, isn't this kind of what we see happening in the garden, in the story of Adam and Eve? God creates this magical world, this brand new place for them to experience and to enjoy and to participate in. A world in which they trust that their needs will be met. A world in which they are dependent on God to provide. A world in which they get to create and explore. They get to name the animals. They get to be a part of it, a world in which they get to let their imagination run wild because they're literally shaping and forming a whole new world. It's a world in which they get to run naked through the woods without guilt or shame or judgment towards themselves or each other. It's a world in which they are truly free. And then they're confronted with this choice, with this fruit. Will we remain in our freedom, or will we choose to be like God? They choose the self. They choose to elevate the ego, thinking that that is the thing that will lead to freedom. Having more control, knowing more things, that that is the thing that will lead them to the freedom, not realizing that it's the ego that will eventually become their own slavery. I mean, think about this from the position of Elias. Think if he woke up tomorrow and came to me and was like, "Dad, I want to take on all your responsibilities." Like, what would happen to that poor kid? What would happen to him? Like, if he woke up tomorrow and was like, "Dad, okay, I'm going to take on your responsibilities." He's a six-year-old who's now going to try to pay the mortgage and the car payment. And he's trying to figure out, like, what his political stance is on things. And he's trying to balance, like, family and work. And he's trying to get the kids to practice. And he's trying to balance the budget. And it would obliterate his freedom, which means it would also destroy the joy and wonder and imagination that he has. He would become a slave to these things and miss out on the freedom that is his life now, the things that I want him to be able to experience now. This is why, isn't it? This is why we as parents take on these responsibilities for our kids, so that our kids can live in this freedom. This is, to me, essentially what Adam and Eve did. They're like these kids living in this incredible world with this incredible freedom, experiencing the kingdom of heaven on earth that they would just call earth. That would just been earth for them. And by choosing to want to be like God, they choose the self over the will of God and essentially usher themselves out of the garden and into the slavery of the self. It's interesting to think of the garden this way, isn't it? Because you could almost like even take this, you could take this like a step further, right? You think about this, that it's only when they eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that they are then ushered outside of the garden. So first you have this issue of the self that we talked about, right? But now they're also, like, as they've gained this knowledge, they lose their connection to the magical garden, to the tree of life, and then their work becomes laborsome. It becomes toil. When you see kids play, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Anything can be anything. If we get a box at our house, Elias claims it because it's now a toy and it can be anything. And he gets scissors and sometimes a knife, but it's scary with the knife, so we try to not give him the sharp knife, butter knife maybe, I don't know. He's only stabbed a couple things, only a couple holes in the couch. So he gets a knife, some scissors, he gets some markers, and it's anything. He creates his own little world that he gets to participate in and play. It's a fort, it's a car, it's an airplane, it's anything that he wants it to be. And that'll keep him entertained for like a week. It'll keep him entertained for like a week or until I get frustrated by moving the box around the house and want to throw it out. And then he gets sad and then we get another box and he's happy again, right? We get a box at the house, he sees endless possibilities. I see something that needs to be recycled. There's something that happens to us as we get older. We seem to lose that wonder and that joy and that imagination. And even if we still have some of it, it's not like it used to be, is it? If my kid finds a stick on the ground, it can be anything. It can be anything. It can be a javelin, a sword, a magic wand. It could be a shovel. It could be a lightning rod. I don't know. I see a stick, and I know that it's something that was a part of a tree that has now died from a nearby tree, and that it's in the yard. I'm probably going to have to mow over it, so I should probably pick it up so it doesn't ding my lawnmower blades, which then I have to replace, and I have to make an extra trip to Home Depot, and it's a whole thing. Right? Like, I see the problems. He sees the possibilities. It seems like as we go through our lives, we have these various ups and downs. And as we grow in our knowledge of how things work, we are no longer impressed or intrigued or enthralled by things. I see recycling. He sees an airplane. I see a chore. He sees possibilities. It's almost like as we grow in our knowledge, our wonder seems to dwindle a bit, which is really a shame because we live in an incredible world, right? I'm not saying don't learn stuff. I'm not saying don't grow in your knowledge. I'm not saying ignorance is bliss and live in that world. Like, because knowledge can also be an incredible tool to ignite wonder and imagination. I've been reading this book called, it's way out of my depths of like how smart I think I am, but not really. It's called Jesus Christ, the Quantum Physicist. Yeah, I'm reading that. And it's like blowing my mind up a little bit. And it's talking about how there's all this incredible stuff in the quantum realm that's happening in front of us that we cannot see, but it's all over the place. Like, it's wild. The quantum world is wild. Like, light, this light that you're seeing used to see me, like, it's both a particle and a wave. It's not one or the other, but it depends on when you observe it, what it will be. What? I don't know. It's both. It's black, it's white. No, it's gray. Like, all this stuff is happening all the time. We don't give this a second thought. We're entirely unimpressed at this amazing thing that we don't fully understand yet. We don't understand something as simple as light fully. What? Like, how is that a thing? Even Ezra, my son Ezra, he's in third grade. He's learning this past couple of weeks about photosynthesis in school. Photosynthesis. How are we not blown away by photosynthesis? A plant can literally transform light, this light energy, which we're not sure if it's a wave or a particle, but it's both, but it's at the same time can be one. I don't know. But it takes that. It takes this light and transform it into a chemical energy that it can use to grow itself. What? Like, this is stuff like that you would see out of a crazy sci-fi movie, and it's happening in our everyday world, and we're like, oh, yeah, cool. We learn it in third grade, and we're like, that's awesome, I guess. We don't know what it is in third grade, and then we get to college, we're like, yeah, whatever. And then you get, like, to your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, whatever, and then you're just trying to, like, appease the HOA and keep your lawn proper, and then we're like, dang, weeds growing up in my yard. Like, this thing that we should be blown away by has now become a nuisance. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's the low status of the child that actually allows for the high amount of freedom for the child. It's the low status of the child that allows for the high amount of freedom and wonder and joy and imagination. It's this high amount of freedom that allows them to run and jump and play and wonder and explore and grow and be fascinated and to ask a billion questions that I don't have the answers to. I don't know why the moon isn't made of cheese. I'm sorry. They're asking a billion questions because they're not bored at the life that they are living. They're intrigued. They are participating in it. They are in awe of it. Doesn't that seem like a better way to live? Isn't that what we all want really deep inside of us? And really, isn't that kind of what we were made for? Jesus gets asked, who is the greatest in the kingdom? And he says, unless you change and become like this little child, this child with no money, no power, no authority, but a great deal of freedom and joy and wonder. Unless you become like that, you will never experience the kingdom of heaven. Right? He's talking about status, which flies in the face of how many of us live, how much of the world operates. But essentially, this is about dying to the self. The kingdom is entered into and experienced through the death of self. We die to the self now so that we can live fuller and freer lives now. We step into the fullness of the life in the kingdom. And we experience the wonder and joy and imagination and the freedom that we were meant to experience from the very beginning. It is for freedom that Christ has set you free. It's only after the caterpillar dissolves itself that it experiences the beauty and the freedom of its butterfly self. Only after humbling the self will we enter into and experience the kingdom of heaven. Only after entering into the kingdom of heaven and humbling of the self will we experience the joy and the wonder and imagination and the freedom of the child. It's only after the death of self that we will experience the life that comes after death. And that, I believe, is the fullness of life that Jesus came to offer us.
Thank you for that, Seth. It's at this moment in our service each week where we invite you to take some time to pray and to meditate and to commune, to do business with God. And so I would like to just invite you and challenge you over these next few minutes. Ask God to reveal to you where it is in your life that you need to humble yourself. Maybe where it is in your life that you are consciously or unconsciously pursuing status and power and influence, and where perhaps a better service to your life and a better service to the kingdom would be to pursue humility in place of those things. If you're in-house with us today, obviously we're around tables. There's a communion tray at each table. In just a minute, I'm going to invite you to pray at your table. So maybe be eyeballing the other people there and like make eye contact with whoever you think you want to pray, if it's not you. We have our prayer partners over against the wall. Here's Brian and Dell Turner over by the prayer wall. Over on this side, it's our elder Kevin Hypes. And they're there for you. They're there to be a shoulder, a support, a help to you if you need prayer. If you're online, you obviously are more than welcome to take communion at whatever table you're around, be it a coffee table or a kitchen table, with whatever elements that you have. You also have prayer partners available. If you're on our church online stream, there's a button that says Get Prayer. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can type a prayer into the chat, but you should be aware that that's public. And so if you don't want to post that in a public forum on the internet forever, you can also send an email to info@thefoundryc.org. But again, over these next few minutes, we're going to create some space. You don't need to feel rushed at all. You have time. You have business to do with God. And so lean into that. Make the most of this time in our service. All right, let's respond.
Thank you again for taking some time out of your week to spend a little bit of time with us here on the Foundry Church podcast. If you would like more information about who we are and what we do and what we believe, you can check us out at our website, thefoundryc.org. It's the foundry, just the letter C, .org. There should be a link to that in the show notes if I've done my job well. You can also reach out to us if you'd like to start a conversation or have any questions we can answer for you. You can send an email to info@thefoundryc.org. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to, like I said, answer any questions that you've got or respond to comments or suggestions that you may have. For now, though, that's going to do it for this episode of the Foundry Church Podcast. We'll see you next time.